The bill was discussed yesterday informal. Because it has not been passed yet by the National Assembly. The National Assembly is basically in the negotiation, which is the National Assembly. Therefore, it's not yet in front of us. Having said that, this is just the team members who are here, members of the committee. On my extreme right, I have Mr. Nehru, who is from the SNK. He's based in Etinaka. Then I have Mr. Hilden next to him, who is also a member, very highly experienced person that has been with me for some time about his experience. He has been with me for 23 years. But they were such a good experience. Experience in local government. Even if we are rich in the community. He's coming from the local case, the biggest province. In terms of size, there's no population in the city. On my left, I have the only chief amongst our ranks. Hopefully, we'll be attending the international debate on traditional affairs, which is taking place tomorrow. The Gala dinner today. Tomorrow and Friday, the only chief amongst ourselves. Chief Hoshin Gwena, who is a member of the committee, coming from Limpopo official, but practical in Kumala. There is a big new communication. Then next to him, we have Mr. West, who is coming from the Free State, a passionate and continuous sports fan, a supporter of Cheetah, and also the Lumbadison. And I do know in the country that we talk, Lumbadison is the best supporter. We win that every year. We come from that person, Mr. West. Next to Mr. West is the Mamanyanda, who is coming from people who believe that they are white, from the East. Of the country in Mpumalanga. He's the mother of the committee, like us all the time. Mamanyana. Next to him, small, of the Chris, Babunduru. He's from Bazunatara. It's the first time I see him wearing his glasses now. I think it's getting done every Then we, I think if allow the department to introduce the team that is here, Gilde.
My name is Shabi Masheed, I'm the parliamentary director of this.
My name is Myron Peters, I'm from DPRC, local government.
I am
Mr.
Hikas Manika from the Department of Wildlife Intergovernmental Affairs. I'm Vidal Gunes from the Department of Legal Services.
I'm Malu Singolo from the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor and the Chief Legal Advisor.
Yeah, I just also wanted to just notify that my DDG, Mr. Roy Africa, is on his way. He had a fight this morning, so he missed the plane to be a little late.
Okay.
Let
us allow the department then to take us through. Are you waiting for the good one?
No, we're ready.
You're ready?
Yes.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to members of the committee. And others present here from state law advisors and such. Thanks. What we will do is just run you through the bill as it is before you at the moment. So we will refer to the specific clauses, but we've done it in such a way that we've given you some of the background, as well as trying to also give you some of the comments we as a department received on the first version, so that you get some idea of what, just a dipstick idea of what is going on. And then we'll refer to some of the, at the beginning of last, some of the amendments that were made by the Portfolio Committee on Local Government. I suppose everybody, I will be going through the flight program that you have in front of you. And of course, they are numbered. So as I finish the three slides, something that I will go to the next page and show that you can keep track of where I am. So I'm on page one now. And what we're going to do is look at the background, the content of the bill. We're going to deal with amendments to the Demarcation Act and Structures Act, amendments to the Municipal Systems Act, and amendments to the Property Rates Act. We'll also look at some redundant legislation that we are repealing. We'll talk about some of the consultations that we've had, and also the amendments made by the Portfolio Committee on Local Government. As far as the background goes, the bill stems from monitoring the implementation of three pieces of local government legislation and also proposals for some urgent amendments. What has happened is that there have been, over the number of years, a number of proposals being made, some of which were policy and some of which were mere technical. And we had developed a comprehensive bill, but it was felt that certain things out of that comprehensive bill should are of an urgent nature, and therefore we should take it into this bill. We also were aware of some policy issues which we thought would be best addressed if they were addressed as part of the overall process of dealing with the review of the local government and the white paper process for the department. And so forth. So some of those policy issues that were proposed to us by stakeholders we held back because of the white paper process and so forth. And also to refine and align policy provisions reflected in recent legislation, strengthen enforcement measures, and improve technical and legal presentation. Of course, you know, there's the advent of the Municipal Finance Management Act and also the advent of treasury regulations. All these new pieces of legislation therefore have an impact on legislation that was determined around 2000, and therefore we're trying to bring it in alignment so that there is no contradiction and ambiguity created, which can then become problematic when people on the ground begin to interpret it. Because then they'll say, no, this legislation says that, no, but that legislation says that. And there are a couple of examples of that that we've tried to smooth that out and align. The effective pieces of legislation are the Demarcation Act, the Municipal Structures Act, the Municipal Structures Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, that is only in reference to alignment with that act, and the Municipal Property Rates Act. I'm now on the background page number 2. Previously, the bill was submitted and presented to the Government and Administration Cabinet Committee on the 27th of March 2007. That committee recommended that we conduct more consultation with the respective departments that were present there, and that we did. And they had made a number of suggestions, and their amendment suggestions were accepted to the bill as a result of the consultation with the department, and the bill was submitted to Cabinet on 30th May 2007 for approval for publication, and the bill was published for comment, public comment that is, on the 4th of June 2007. That's just background information. We now go to the content of the bill, and it's on page 3. Starting the second time, what we've done is we've not gone clause by clause. What we've done is we just looked at thematic areas, and then said in terms of the thematic areas, this is the clauses that relate to them, and this is what we try to do here. So the first problem area that we have, the Municipal Demarcation Act and Municipal Structures Act, the first problem area is improving planning and budgeting for service delivery. In terms of that, We have amendments in terms of clause 1, 2, 3, 8, and 9. The amendments deal with fiscal alignment with boundary redetermination, with authorization to perform certain functions and adjustment of powers and functions between the municipalities. Number 2, such a redetermination, authorizations and adjustments must take effect on the commencement date of the municipal financial year, following the date of publication of the notice effecting such a redetermination, authorizing or adjustment. This would ensure that there is improved fiscal alignment and sufficient time for planning in this way. So one of the biggest problems, if I could give an example, was that you have different pieces of legislation, you know, governing demarcation procedures, and then you have financial legislation in the MFMA, and as well as you have national government annual budgeting processes. What was happening is we found serious difficulty because there would be any determination, boundary changes and so forth and so forth, and they would have to be taking place, take effect for any year. But then that had an effect on the allocations and the equitable share. As you know, the allocations and equitable share for local government is done on a yearly basis, and it is then effected through the division of revenue bill. So when somewhere after the bill is passed, the division of revenue bill, and the allocations are made and you're giving, and suddenly there are changes in these powers and functions and boundary determination, resulting in the need now to adjust the local government equitable share. It meant that now you would have had to go back and start amending that bill that you passed in February, that the Minister of Finance put through and passed some around April, you know, that he passed around April. And that was proving a lot of difficulties. And so, For better alignment and planning, also planning for the provision for the new allocation, the National Treasury was very, very, very strongly that any determinations on powers and functions take place, you can do so during the year, you can have them, but if they come into effect in the municipal financial year, the next municipal financial year. That would then allow National Treasury to take into account, say, from June, July, August, September, October, any determinations to all the rearrangements and equitable share, and then put that into the Minister's budget speech and into the division of revenue for the next year. That is a very serious, strong request that this alignment takes place. So we don't have the ad hoc things happening, and then we have to change the typical share during the year, which then takes quite a lot of time and process. So that's the alignment around those clauses there. I'm going to go on page 3 and then 2.1, again, one of the last slides here. We also have a problem area of improving alignment with the constitution and implementation of policy to strengthen the role of ward committees. There have been some previous amendments to the constitution, and all we're doing here is just bringing this, the structure that's in alignment with that. There was amendments pertaining to section 139 intervention. These amendments will result in processes pertaining to dissolving a municipal council now being aligned with dissolving a municipal council in terms of section 139 of the constitution. Those were constitutional amendments made some time back, before the time I took the position. Then there is clause 6 and 7. 6 and 7 as it stands now strengthens the role of ward committees. These amendments relate to the provision of out-of-pocket expenses for members of ward committees and the provision for making allocations to ward committees for undertaking development. These amendments will facilitate strengthening of the role of ward committees. As you know, members of ward committees have to travel and they incur expenses within meetings and so forth. And a request was made through the section in the department that deals with ward committees that at least some provision be made to compensate people for their traveling expenses and so forth. So we provided for that out-of-pocket expenses, and obviously it will come from the budget of the municipality. The portfolio committee in its deliberations included another clause there, and that clause under 6 is clause D, if you look in the bill, because there was a strong recommendation coming from stakeholders and the chairperson that de facto allocations at the moment are being made by some municipalities to ward committees. And these are not just, they are different from allocations for out-of-pocket expenses for paying for refreshments during meetings. Some of these work committees are engaged in actually a development project in their ward and so forth. And so it was felt that we need to strengthen that and that this should be at the discretion of the municipal council, but within the context and within the accountability of the local government legislation, that is including the MFMA. So those amendments then strengthen the role of our ward committee. And clause 7 is just a minor, it's just a technical amendment. There was a section 32 previously referred to in the Municipal Systems Act. We're just now replacing that with section 59. That section 32 in the Municipal Systems Act was deleted when the Municipal Systems Act has printed and distributed now. We're just correcting that and saying, okay, it refers to delegation of functions of power. This is the right section that should be referred to. That's what we do in that section. Now, amendments to the Municipal Systems Act. Now we're going to page 4 of your slide presentation. And we're going to the second slide. In terms of the Municipal Systems Act, the problem area that we had was in enhancing the performance management system in primary legislation. We had, we had regulations, for instance, put out on performance management systems and regulations and so forth. But we felt that the current existing legislation was lagging behind, and also there were certain requests for defining more clearly the contract term of municipal managers. So clause 11. Provision is made for the specificity regarding the contract term of municipal managers to at least 5 years, which means that the duration is in alignment with the term of office of the municipal council, with an extra provision that it may extend 1 year into the life of the next municipal council. Because previously it was 2 years, and we felt that it was too much because you need to give the municipal council a chance, number one, to decide whether it would like, to re-advertise the post or, a new municipal manager. But at the same time, if the current manager extends 1 year into the council's, the new council's terms of office, it actually
maintains the institutional memory and knowledge so that that municipal manager can then inform the new municipal manager should they require information on budgets and, you know, expenses and projects. Especially after April, May, June, there's a lot of preparation to pass a new budget, and it's that old municipal manager who will have that knowledge. So we made that provision, so there's continuity, there's no sudden break, and you know, so that, but of course we've cut it down to 1 year now rather than 2 years. Into, you know.
Given the information that you presented in terms of the intention of the team, when we're giving the background, right? But also the actual area where you are assessing in relation to the issue of financial year and so on, when there is a change of boundaries within municipality and so on. And as much as the issue of the work committees, which are quite fascinating because they deal with the participation of the people on the ground in terms of what they should happen. Therefore, I would require, my colleagues to engage some people of that here as well. Any questions, colleagues? No. Yeah.
My first question is based on the decision to take this being technically fine. By his nature, as the writer said, he also touches on communication. There are ways to match it in whatever we say about matching things that affect provinces and provinces. There's a reason why it's about 10, 30 days of time. That is only my first question. My second question is if this bill tries to address the question of the work committee, I want to know that the form it's going to, as you say, you have to see the work committee, because whenever we visit or doing our advice in any municipality, especially those that candidates for session 109, we rely on work committees to tell us if they are happy with the happenings of those particular municipalities. And the complaint always that there will be. They'll say we're called to meetings and the government. We're not assisted financially. They're not assisted in time. But now I want to know specifically how is the system going to be. So that to remove this ambiguity, the kind of assistance that we're going to be. Because I think they're going to be. But for them to just go there and give some one type of bread and some marshal and everything else. So because even in terms of transport, they rely on someone to transport them. And if a municipality feels that the work committee will come and expose them, they don't even assist them in terms of transporting them to the meeting. They don't even call them sometimes. Now that's why I want to say exactly. So if it's here, you kind of have to get to there from now on. Now, the last one here is in terms of the MM. I'm able to deal with the question of the MM now. We are giving them now they're going to, their contract will serve for about 5 years. I wonder if is there any option? Is there any option if within 5 years if we can buy out their contract? If someone is not performing. Huh? If he or she is not performing. Is there any provision in there? Had to be removed. I think it's the intention. But on the other hand, those are my questions.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thanks to his mind, he is with regard to also the out-of-pocket expenses towards the if one is to pay whatever amount is transferred to the Board Committee 50 rand a day, but what worries me is this, obviously the money allocated for these things must be agreed to by that particular council. But are there going to be no limits on this? I mean, let's for example, they allocate development in the wards within the framework of the law. What is the framework of the law and the development? That word development could be anything. Could be, quite large. What is exactly meant by that? And what accountability for the amount? You could have a ward committee and you want to use a ridiculous hypothetical example. They decide they're going to have champagne at every meeting and barbecue, braai, whatever. I just want to know what's the accountability. And that council says, yes, no, fine. You know, send the money there. That's, how is it going to fit in relation to what you're going to do? That is the one. And then the other one, I just want to clarify on the term of office for, I'm going now by memory here, 5 years for municipal manager. And then it says that quarter a year after the election, or after, let's say a municipal change of hands. That municipal manager will then remain for a year after that time, or can the new incoming municipality terminate his contract like has happened in Shakedown Municipality and others? What is the position with regard to that? If the municipality changes hands and they don't particularly want to be the manager, is it then envisaged that he will stay on for an extra year or to hand over? Thank you.
Thanks for Jefferson, verses 3, where we are talking about the what committees pertaining to the dissolution of the council, according to section 139. I want to check firstly whether did we apply a mandate to the councillors? What councillor is the chair of the ward committee? So I want to check that when the councillor is dissolved, and then whilst the let's say we have used the section 139, section 3, where we say the councillor is just we are going for the election in the council, and then we've got the ward committee, I believe the 2 years, the lifetime or the term of office of the ward committee, to try to align the term of office of the ward committee and that of the council. Provided I've seen here that we have done some adjustment with the municipal manager, so I want to check with the what committee, the term of office, and also the ward councillor being the chair of the ward committee in the ward. If you can clarify
that. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I first of all ask you to support the work in this sense that we're dealing with the amount of money that's going to be paid to work them as a country in the discretion of the council. And I don't think that is a very clever move to do. I think we must apply our minds to think of a better way, even if we have a fixed scale of what committee members can expect to get from us. I don't think we should leave it open-ended like this. And then as far as the context of the municipal managers are concerned, I don't say that the Parliament is an important job, but we have a job that dies on a certain day after the election. If the company is going to take over your employment stock the day they take over, be successful. Except if the new incoming MD wants you or doesn't want you, then he lets you go. Why must we give this experience? Why can't we allow, after the election, a new mayor is elected, a new council is elected, allow them to appoint a municipal manager for the next 5 years? I cannot see the sense in why we must give it for 1 year, because it might be totally out of place to keep that municipal manager on. So I think we must relook at that, and these services must be terminated in the same way as a parliamentarian or whatever it is. It's terminated on the day that there's a major change in the setup. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, I think Mr. LaRue wanted to convey that a municipality is an institution of a people. Individuals, political and administrative, are deployed to take public affairs. It means they act on behalf of the public. Therefore, in so doing, you require a situation where a municipality must be able to ensure that the institutional memory is continuous. Right? Institutional memory and knowledge management. Therefore, you can't abstract it. It's because the new government has come in to just a move. Therefore, the issue I think the question that we must be discussing here is the timetable. To say a year, I think it's too much. It's too much. I mean, it means we are left 4 years to implement your own agenda as a party. It was too much. I mean, a year. Maybe you can talk about the period of 3 months. A year. To me, Roma, that is not that individual at all. To me, I think what we can be talking about in this committee is a people, maybe to say 3 to 6 months. But I think all of us, I think we share the same idea. Yes. Because this fellow, or woman or man, is here, he's not supporting your family, so I'm telling you, yeah. For a year, you'll be tolerated for a year. For a year, it's too much. I'm scared. I
share the same sentiment that, you know, I think a yes. Yeah. 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 You know, we must also look at that as well.
No, I think something that must be said, that's the people. Well, I think the actual one that you could have thought is that the people associated with Hanover, the Hanover, like the people.
Right.
The institution remains with the memory able to function. But I think the issue then that must be discussed as a committee is the potential, whether it is a year, not too much. Well, you 3 years, I mean, we are left 4 years. This thing, I tried to raise with some boy. This text. You know, these things, they affect the community direct. And you find that most of the calls, they are driven by the NEC. It is the establishment, this establishment, the storm and all that. I'm not talking about those communities because of that. I'm just raising those levels. But you find that this gives the only text section 75, which defies provinces who are supposed to be the members of the state and opportunities to engage in the state. The issue of text also, I'll be interested to hear why is this, because sometimes those things are done for convenience. Take a shortcut, you want to buy the deal quickly, therefore you don't want to be settled with engaging the provinces and communities at that level. You just come with a ticket. To me, I think something that must engage them, if I agree with you, brother, that this taking story, it's on the local government matter. It's quite something that I think must engage in a way that they take us forward. The issue of the out-of-pocket expenses, is there any definition or definition? Because you know these rules of the law. One thing means something means different things to different people. But this is the definition of what it means. But I know this term, you know, it's up against coming to this term. When we were motorized in another area, I'm talking about auto shock expert. And now it's known. I'm not going to formal in terms of it being in the case place. It's the outcome of the case. Is there any definition for it so that different people are following it in a proper way? I'm very happy with this thing of on point B there. That says on course three. That talks about the allocation of resources. But I know some counselors. They give maybe a million or so amount in a particular ward to say, look at what development we take. You know, the one to encourage people involvement in development. But I think that level would be nice that we hear in that. Now, let's allow them that the department report. And of course, we are fortunate that this is the elder actually that's right. Maybe you'll allow him time to drink some water. Those are the first couple of questions that have been raised. Let's hear from yourself. You have a very good deal.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will deal with some of the questions, but I would also welcome our legal person here, Roy, to comment on some of the more technical legal issues, and also later Mr. Africa. I think number one is. Let's deal with this the year of the municipal financial manager. Look, fundamentally, the municipal manager will have to enter into an employment contract plus a performance contract. Those are two things. And in any employment contract, and it is separate all over, there are terms of references in that clauses in that employment contract for the termination of a contract. and the terms on which those contracts. They are normal standard course where both parties have the right, you know, the means to renegotiate the contract or terminate the contract. This is, it's part of contractual law. You know, you have that in contractual law. It also fits neatly into labor law, especially for managers. So the, you know, so there's provision in that that should a municipality feel that the municipal manager is not performing, they can engage him at any time in the period of the contract on this matter. And also within the procedures and prescripts of, you know, the labor law and so forth. They can renegotiate it, they can terminate it, they can do that. But what we are saying is that try to keep that contract as far as possible for the period of 5 years. You know, you sign a fixed term. But in contract, you also have provisions for extending, you know, you have all those sort of leverages should you require a person to stay on a few more months or something like that. You have those leverages. I mean, and I'm not sure if you're aware, but we also have our performance management regulations that we published last year, in 2006, which looks at all the more details of performance contracts and so forth and so forth, and in terms of office and what should be in a contract and so forth and so forth. So we have that to take care of that. So in a sense, you the performance contract is very flexible, but also gives a lot of leverage to the municipality to make determinations either way, any time in the period of that. What we are saying is, yes, when you sign the contract, keep it for 5 years and align it more or less with the life of the a new municipal council, but allow for that period where the municipal, a new municipal council, when it comes into, let's say you have elections in March or something, let's say for example you have elections in March, April, a new municipal council. Now, and you don't have a municipal manager there because in March, it was strictly terminated. Now, the process of setting up, the process of recruitment takes about 4 or 5, it can even take 6 months. I mean, if you allow for some legal battles and challenges in terms of normal employment, you know, a person can contest and so forth, it's allowed. It could take quite a long time because the council has to set up a panel, terms of reference, and they might be new, most of them might be new, there might be some older people, but you know, there might be some new people in there. And it'll take such a long time. Now, April, May, June, July. July, they must pass a budget, they must pass an IDP, they must do. And they don't have a municipal manager because the recruitment process is taking, you know, 1 month for advertising, 1 month to set up the panel, trying to get people, you know, so forth and so forth. And they don't want to rush it at the same time because they know if they select somebody, he's going to be there for 5 years, maybe you want to send him for tests. You know, after the interviews, they go for different types of tests to check their capabilities and competencies and so forth like that. And all. So what we're saying is that we need that window period where there's an overlap of the municipal manager into that year to help that municipality with some very, very urgent and important things. So the cutoff directly might not be a very suitable thing, directly after, you know, the election, the guy stops his job, you know, it may not be suitable. And it might lead to some disruptions and problems of the council trying to coordinate all its affairs to meet that July deadline. Because July is too important document. If also the financial statements, please remember that, you know, you have to get your financial statements ready for the next year and deal with auditors and publish a report and so forth. And you need all of that institutional, you know, memory there for you. We thought 1 year into this would be fairly reasonable. But it's still even if it were to be a case of a municipal manager had a contract going 1 year into the new, the contract would be of such a nature it still allows the council to terminate in 8 months or 6 months or 4 months. As it may, you know, require. But we thought it would be useful to give them that leverage because in that period they might require about 6 or 7 months before we get a new municipal manager in. Because remember, they're coming in on the first day. They're not there in with the old Lord preparing recruitment, you know, advertising and so forth. They come in the first day, they take office, then they have to do all the recruitment and advertising for the new manager. And so we thought that 1 year is sufficient leeway. Should, you know, you never know what circumstances they might be faced with. In all kinds of legal or whatever it is, procedural matters to correct and so forth.
Well, I think that people, the leadership here, feel that a year is that, you know, the communication, that's right. It is based on the fact that it's one part of the town. But that's all they are taking. Look at SDA in Cape Town. It's a hook. It hasn't gone through there for years. So you know that it's a good thing. Mkoku will ensure it will remain the same supervision. I mean, what some policies say. And the SDA is the same. You know, you find that the mayor, Helen Zilla, there, the size of Mkoku makes a very little. Very little. He wants as soon as possible to remove Mkoku. Now, to say that he must say yes, it means 4 years. It means then, Mayor Helen Zilla left only 4 years to come. Would recommend that that she wants. That she has. Is that fair? It's not for a political party. It's not that your whole year is cut. It's your of your time to implement your program with the personnel that you want. Now you know what is when they complain. They know that and they know the possibility of coming, whether they ready to come or not. It means you put in your mind that yeah, no, we are taking over. Then I was now doing the property. When people were proposing it, they were preparing. They told me that no, we are taking over for people on. It's really his life. Now I'm saying, I think the committee is saying here, a year is too much. It is upon the time of the political party to implement this agenda. It is not the same matter. The issue of employment contract, I'm not the basis for you to send the contract. What is the thing? Employment contract is about people being able to meet their capital. You can't just, I mean, there's a law in this country, where the constitutional state, under the rule of law. You can't just eliminate the same with the contract and so on. Therefore, the stipulation here is protecting people, what issues are in the year, which I think we must focus on that if it's upon the time for the political party, the parties are coming in that way. I mean, I can make a lot of examples about the municipality is not existing. That as good as possible, they've taken over alignment of weapons, and they are unhappy about this people. Therefore, I'm saying to say that after they've taken over, after election, yes, to me, I think that's what the community is, if it has been. To me, I must be honest with you, I think people are not going to say, 6 months is perfect. Anything beyond that, I think is a bit unfair to go that way. You cannot, to hand over cannot say, yes. Because the organization is something more. Now, the question is raised here by the committee that the alignment of contracts and so on must allow an overlap of 6 months, not more than that. After election. That's what I think the committee is feeling very strong about it. And I think for the first charge, the ANA is agreeing.
I hope it's not the last.
So just to support you, Jefferson, the thing is that the gentleman has a contract. It's so difficult. It's easy to say around the table you've got the right to terminate. But if you know in practice it doesn't work like that, there's always a legal angle to it. You can't get rid of a person easily, especially if he's got a solid contract. But we prepare to leave it a new council with budgets of billions of rand.
Why don't we not have the trust in the DA? Whoever is the new, I hope it's the DA, but the DA. Why should we not leave it in the discretion of the new mayor and his committee? We give him billions to run a city with. And obviously, if there's a problem with the institutional memory, it would be silly for a new council to just abandon that form. So I will go along once more with the NC and say not more than 6 months, I would imagine, to do that.
Yeah, maybe to shoot it down again, this proposal. So maybe let me start your check. I want to give notice that in the following meeting, when we consider the bill format, I want to propose an amendment to this law. The format notice. Now, to even put it in further, because this argument to the department is as if this is a miracle, or are we looking at all here at all? And the partners are probably better. There are so many acting municipal managers in the country. So now we assume this person is the alpha and omega. If he's not there, heaven is going to fall. No, it's not true. I mean, we can be made like a charity state. Well, through the charity organization. We can. So we are already formalizing this person, not formalizing this person. So we can be the number of those of your proposal.
I think obviously, you know, we are here as technocrats to give the best technical advice to yourselves as politicians and to make the best decisions. So clearly we understand that. I think just take at least just two other things into consideration. I think the kind of first obvious point to make is that, you know, when we put the Systems Act in place, you all know that the Systems Act takes for 2 years that go beyond the original term of contract. And obviously, everyone in this room is that 2 years pose the problem. So I think there is completely an unanimity on that. Even for kind of technical and administrative reasons, there is a problem for that. So obviously what we're debating here is about how much we think we can need to shorten that period. And from a technical administrative perspective, I think the primary concern, which I think one just needs to stress here, that what we're really trying to deal with, besides political considerations, is really the issue of continuity in respect of administration. I mean, that is what we're trying to deal with. So when there's a change of political leadership in the municipality, the 1 year was an attempt, and obviously the 2 years were even a greater attempt to try and ensure administrative continuity and stability. So I think that is the one point that I just wanted to stress. But I think we are really just now, where this 1 year, 6 months, I think clearly, you know, the committee can take a decision on that. But I think the kind of second and last point is just to emphasize, because I think, I hope that this point came out very clearly in our initial presentation. This legislation that we're tabling here today is definitely not meant to be a kind of wide-ranging set of fundamental proposals regarding the requirements of the local government. I'm saying this bill is not aimed at doing that. This bill has got a very limited purpose of seeking what we term as urgent and necessary amendments. So this entire bill is qualified by those two terms. What we regard to be urgent and what we deem to be necessary by way of keeping our local government system to be operating very efficiently and functionally and effectively. Now, why I'm saying that here, so I'm just reminding the committee of our approach to this bill that we take here, is because there is another process that will be much more wide-ranging, slightly more fundamental in terms of looking at our local government system, looking at the legislation, and even the white paper. So I'm saying hopefully we'll have the opportunity, and this committee will have the opportunity to come back to slightly more fundamental issues which we have not necessarily
applied in my report to be strict on the result of the minor. Thank you, thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much, everyone. Well, we got an apology. That you have passed the law. Nepal welcomed you with smiles and open arms.
My other colleagues will also contribute to dealing with some of the concerns raised by the members, and one of them is the issue of allocation, out-of-pocket expenses to ward committee. I would just point out that section D there says allocate funds and resources. So it's not only it's non-financial. You know, like you might have some officials in the municipality that you want to deploy there for a day or two at the ward committee, you know what I mean, to, or do organizing, transport, if the municipality has transport, it can, you know, make transport available for whatever activity and so forth. So it's also resources as well as allocating. Now, with regard to the allocating funds, I mean, there was a concern here raised about, you know, what accountability, how much, what are the limits and so forth and so forth. Now, the initial proposal was made when the hearings took place, and the committee accepted that the proposal was for making an allocation of 2% of budget to ward committees. Now, after much deliberation, it was felt that it's very difficult to actually put a percentage because the budgets of different municipalities vary, and secondly, we should for the time being only accept putting here the principle, putting in this clause it accepts the principle, and that the details of those things as a department we should not micromanage. We should allow it because different municipalities will have their procedures and have different budgets. And have a different approach to it and how they will want to deal with it. So it was very difficult to actually put a percentage and a limit on it. But secondly, municipalities have, there's a contestation about the extent to which you can encroach into the actual procedures and their own policies and so forth. So one has to allow the municipality make its decisions and even probably take a policy on how they would implement it. But this also, in a sense, provides the department some scope to actually later on, come up with a set of guidelines or regulations around this thing that, that could take into account, for instance, the matter of limiting. But just to point out that around the ward committees, the department is at the moment I've got a paper which they're discussing internally. It's a complete review of the public participation system of local government. And much more far-reaching or wider guidelines will come out from that. So that's what I want to say, that we didn't want to become too micromanaging and, stipulating. And because of the variations of municipalities, if you put one amount, could mean different things to different municipalities and so forth. Now, in terms of the out-of-pocket expenses, yes, here again, in regulations, we can define that in regulations, but generally, it would refer to transport costs, to meetings, and, if, for instance, you incur buying food or something, when you're hungry at a meeting or something, and you get reimbursed for that. And we see the accountability being, we've said here somewhere else that the municipality must make arrangements for payment of our property. That means it must have a policy and a procedure of how it will go and pay. For instance, it will say, submit your receipt. And then we will pay you out on the basis of that receipt. And normally you pay into a person's account or you give cash and so forth. So that is a form of accountability, and that kind of accountability will be within the prescripts of the MFMA, the accounting procedures and so forth and so forth. We don't see a situation where, you would have a work committee would have its own bank account and so forth and so forth, and it would be signing off from there. from that bank account. We see it's part of the whole system run by the municipality. But we would welcome any definitions that you would want to propose on out-of-pocket expenses. And here again, you know, there's very different, differing situations. I mean, people in rural areas traveling is different from people in cities and so forth, you know, and so we've got to take into account the variation in traveling or getting to meetings or meet. You never know, you know, in certain cases, the distances are so great, people might have to travel, come for a meeting between 1 or 2 o'clock and take 4 hours back, you know, they might have to stay over or something like that and leave the next morning. We don't know about these variations, so we need a sort of flexibility to allow for those different kinds of variations. On the question of buying out, I think there has been concern about the whole issue of buying out of the municipal managers, and it usually takes place because of the breakdown in the relationship between the municipal manager, maybe the mayor or the council or something like that, and or suspension from the which results in sometimes suspension and so forth. Now, in terms of trying to deal with that aspect, we have re-looked at our performance management regulation, and we've revised it, and we're in the process of looking at it internally, legally, and so forth, in order to provide for sections and clauses to that will provide procedures for better management of the matter. The sort of clauses and procedures try to make municipalities think of the cost first if they want to terminate or suspend and so forth, and where the money would come from, you know, and whether or not, you know, this even litigation costs can be avoided at the outset, bearing in mind that eventually there could obviously be litigation costs, there could be these files and so forth. But at least putting in place a sort of a management system which does not exist, especially for the Section 57 managers, on how to manage these suspensions, terminations, and so forth. So we are dealing with that with the second set of regulations, and those regulations, as soon as we sort out the internal procedures in the department, will be published for public comment, as well a copy of those regulations will be sent to Parliament, which would mean that we would come back again to Parliament to address you on that set of regulations to today. On the question of the ward committees, I don't know if my legal section Guyo would, you know, the dissolution of the council, does it automatically result in the dissolution of the ward committee, or does the ward committee continue? Does it mean the chairperson of the ward committee with the council are no longer is? I would ask my legal section to look, you know, comment on that particular comment.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe if I can just come in on that very specific matter. Obviously, I didn't hear the question. I'm hearing it seconded by my colleague. but what is or should be clear to the committee and to ourselves is that if you look at the structure that 475, it talks about the term of office of members, basically meaning ward committee, and it's very clear. It says the members of ward committee are elected for the term, and then it says determined by the council or the local council. So clearly, the term of office doesn't have a life of its own. Because ward committees are advisory structures, they in essence receive their term of office as a direct result of a resolution, I suppose, of council. So I think, depending on what the question was, that is what we come to take for in the structure that.
Yeah. Can I clarify myself? My question was, if you dissolve the council, it means then if you use Section 139C, where the council is dysfunctional and dissolved, it means then they block council, they are going to be election. Now, asking about the ward committees, let's say the term of office of ward committees continues according to that council. Now the council has been dissolved.
water pumping, the white committee, I was asking whether they will continue working. And I was asking because the chairperson of the white committee is the council of the white council. The white council. Now, we have such a problem in Abakulusi municipality when the council has dissolved. And the white committee was saying, no, we are still we are taking over because the council is no longer there. But now the chairperson is no longer there because the council has been dissolved. Now I'm asking, what do we do? Do we say because we dissolved the council, also the white committee, or the white committee, how is it going to function? There is no council. Or whether the white committee will report directly to the administration, but we must check that here when we are refining the legislation, and we must check that as well. What do we say? Because I'm talking about what happened, because the work committee was saying, no, if the chairperson is not there, we're not going to attend the meeting.
Okay. Well, I think you hear it now, the issue of public participation requires a focus, which I think probably in the new process will keep more attention. Yesterday we were with MEC Mabiyatu. Yes, it happened in April. Maximum Congress. Then he was saying, no, if they continue the council, not cooperating, it's going to cause very serious issues. Now the issue then is that in terms of the legislation and the constitution, there is no requirement whatsoever that a provincial government consults the community. And in all examples where the people have done that, they have gone to the council and they dissolve. But this structure is the structure of the community. But not only that, there are instruments that link the community to the council, which are our committee. Now you find that they are not being told. It seems that happened. I mean, this law, the constitution, in fact, we have to look at it as an American affair. The National Council of Provinces is participating there when there is an intervention which is limited on executive obligation, whether you approve it or not. But in the resolution, there is no rule to just be getting home. In a drastic, draconian manner, there's obviously no except to reform. Now it's a contradiction. Now I'm saying these areas of public involvement are areas because I think we're taking consciously that one of the democracy. That comes with consequences there in terms of public development, refinement and so on. That you must be true to the meaning of saying that one is to be in democracy. In terms of the policy that you apply. And the question raised by is in that context. But the practice is that when they vary, the practice they vary. As we were saying, most of the things were human health. They say, no, we continue. And the administration themselves, when you came in, you are inactive. To say, these are structures that are inactive. But we find that it depends upon the political party. If they feel that the administrator is more closer to the ruling party, they say, no, yeah, cooperate. If they feel that, no, you are not, don't cooperate. Therefore, the legislation is not clear, it's not guided to say, irrespective of whatever happens, whoever is coming, whoever these instruments are linked to, this is the constitution in terms of the law. Now, those are the areas that are unclear about this issue. It is in that context. I think that probably what we can agree upon if we have not looked at that. That is something that we must take it through and look along. Because this today is an common thing. We look at the matter and look along. I'm saying we are not compelled to the policies that are
Okay, what I'd also like to suggest is we have a single advisor here and our legal person, and perhaps they could get together and look at that the issue, and then at the next six is sitting or something, you know, provide us with a view on it.
Baba Echo.
Chairman, I think the more important point to make this thing to yourself as chair and a member, I would really plead that the committee try and draw a line in the sand. And the line in the sand that I'm pleading that you apply on my is where matters are regarded to be quite fundamental. And if they are regarded to be fundamental, then this is not the process we're going to deal with it. As I tried to indicate earlier, in this bill we are really dealing with kind of minor administrative amendment, obviously affecting the political domain of our council, that we just seem to be necessary in the short term. But I think just listening to yourself, Chairperson, I think some of the points you're making arguably begin to force us to relook at the entire model of community participation, some of the points you're making. Because if I have to understand what you're saying, currently the system of work committees is a particular model of community participation that we adopt in this country. And that model, to be quite frank, is based by and large on an advisory approach. Work committees don't have executive powers. They cannot make decisions on behalf of municipalities. They are simply there to give advice and give recommendations via the council. Now, I'm saying, depending on the model that we adopt, if we want to take a slightly different approach, it will cause quite a fundamental relook, and I'm saying that I'm making a plea to say that this is not the occasion to kind of do that. Hence, I'm saying there's the policy process, and clearly that process is the more fundamental. So that's the only plea I'm making. So we can ask our colleagues to go and do some legal homework, but at the end of the day, it's not a legal exercise. I think there's a fundamental policy question in terms of what is appropriate within the current bill that we put in front of the committee, and what goes far beyond the bill, which we are also very alive to, and hence we've got two purposes. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think on that, there are two approaches to that. If you want to review the whole public participation process, you can take an argument, say it requires a new approach, which is the process we are going to do, the review of our data. But at the same time, if you are saying no, within the context of advisory processes, clarify the issue of dissolution, whatever. Because these things are happening everything. And now I say that yes, well, we can then offer them a class. You say that no, there's a possibility that we'll dissolve it.
Yeah. No,
that's the issue. Yeah. I think that's an approach that must look at what happens to us. But I think the other thing that is raised by within what is raised by ourselves on this stage. As you were talking, I think maybe we must put it on side as a requirement that a policy, in fact, must develop policy on this out of pocket expenses thing. So that there is a policy for everyone. You know, the policy for all people that think about it. When you are angry today, you don't pay. When you are not angry, you pay. You feel happy. You know that government must be a policy that is developed. And so I think that helps. And the obligation must be within the concept. So that you develop a policy, but at the same time, you say what does it follow? Because sometimes this can also sometimes be an area or breeding ground for corruption. But if there's a policy that we share, then everyone follows it from the But I'm afraid that this one we put here is quite impressive in a way that it's beginning to say, I don't have to go to the neighbor to borrow money to go and do the work of the company. Subsidize the company. I mean, to me, I think it's very, very good.
What's the last problem with the reasonable traveling expenses, still than the award expenses, but I'm interested that it's not capped. It's left at the discretion of the municipalities. If there was any receipt to the award committee for reasonable food transport, that would have a problem. Certain municipalities or persons would have to be transported further than in others. That I can understand. But I mean, if all the mistakes are bringing ward councillors into Okadena, because they're Durban, and they're going to take the Royal Hotel, and they say, well, this is part of my reasonable cost.
would that be regarded as reasonable? Has the costing been done on what this, because usually it's supported municipalities who can't afford to quadruplicate to pay them out. Has any, I'm very concerned that there's no capped amount or some legal framework to maneuver. You know, yes, they will bring in receipts, but you know, what amount? What amount would be regarded as reasonable? That's my problem.
I think there are two things that you must look at, Mr. West, my colleague, is that this is a revolving process, but effective. You want to learn out of it. But to deal with what you are saying, which I think the department must pay much interest, is that if the municipality must develop policies, and on the basis of the policy, you can check and ensure that the policies are in fact assisting what you are saying. Because there's a thing that, I mean, if you remember the public sector, I mean, the mandating procedure. There's a thing like this. That's the key of government. That is customer. The employment policies, the payment policies, the internal arrangement is their domain. If they can take you to the constitutional court, you might find it in my group. Because we want to prescribe in detail what they should do. That is why if you are saying they develop policies, then you ensure that the policies are speaking to each other, they are relevant. The department is the public are supposed to give, but that's oversight role and capacity in the society. That within their policies, you say they must develop policies, but these policies depend whether they are relevant. Then nobody can take you to court to say that you are interfering in the internal arrangement of the municipality. Because they are autonomous bodies. In that way, then you avoid that if you allow them that. You can keep a price and so on. I'm saying, I don't think the department keeps it process that they can come with a figure. That is not within your terrain to do so. Because even if you look at the issue of public office bearer, that is the council, that is determined by another game to say that there's a process of that deal, you must deal with that. But to prescribe to the payment of those committees to say, no, you can pay 10 pence or 100 pence and so on, I think that can be challenged positionally, and I don't think it can withstand a test of time in the constitutional court in terms of you interfering in the internal arrangements of the municipality. That is why I think that to cover yourself, this thing was a policy development and policy, I think it's a fact that it doesn't occupy that central abuse of the moment.
I think just to add to that, the reason is to look at 12.5.15.2. We said the metro or local municipality must implement the criteria for and calculation of out-of-pocket expenses, precisely for the reasons which you started mentioning. So we need a requirement for municipalities to come with these policies. And these policies will have to deal with their circumstances as to how they deal with the things. For example, if you look at other national government, our department has got a policy, like we are here in Cape Town. What sort of hotels we can use and all those things. And if we are working with consultants, whom we have to pay, we expect them to abide by our own rules, not something else. So that is the reason we had this thing. But the so-called criteria was, in another way, starting to talk to what we call the policy in some way, and hence we need to get requirements so that each municipality should have that before they start paying. Because if they don't have it, when people come to pay, so a municipality will have to look at this criteria, that it meets this criteria. For the first thing, every municipality would have to do to have a criteria, emanating from that criteria, is how all the things will have to work, not the other way of somebody staying in our test somewhere, or inherently taking expenses without looking at the criteria.
The word means that you must identify this criteria to make it a policy. The word criteria doesn't deal with the issue enough. To come to that, I think we'll look at it. Well, after, here we're definitely in common society. Mm-hmm. We'll forget that. It's in common society. And we'll come to common society. We'll come, we're just, you know, we're just killing each other. We're just killing each other. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there must be a kind of mutual section, and the chairperson said a convenient section. I wouldn't quite say that, at the risk of being unpopular, I'm going to call it a default section, because what I'm wanting to say is that Section 75 says anything that is not Section 74 or that is not Section 76 is Section 75. Okay? Now, Section 74 is quite clear that it would be your constitutional amendment. Section 76 is a bit difficult, and I think the heading of Section 76 is where it becomes a bit misleading. Because Section 76 says matters or bills affecting provinces. I think, you know, every bill affects provinces. So if we were going to take a broad interpretation there, then every bill would have to be Section 76. So we must be careful. I think what is meant by bills affecting provinces is what the Constitution itself has identified or set out as bills that affect provinces. In other words, bills that provinces can also legislate on, or areas that provinces can also legislate on, for example. So those kind of competencies. Now Section 76, as does Section 74, specifies what must follow Section 76. There we have Schedule 4, which is the concurrent competencies, and it lists a list of that which we use as a checklist. Then in addition to that, Section 76, where is that? Section 76.3 also lists a number of other categories, such as the public matters affecting the public protector, the public service commission, and so on. A couple of very distinct areas that must follow Section 76. So you can basically draw up a checklist. You have your Schedule 4, and then you have the other list of the Schedule 76. So you go into it. This content of this bill deals with the subject matter. Doesn't fall under ambulance, doesn't fall under this, doesn't fall under that. And once you've gone through a checklist and it doesn't fall under those competencies that Section 76 lists, then Section 75. I'm just trying to hide them and simplify it.
We'll come to that. Yeah. I think we are great that we are guilty. No, not that I feel that we are guilty. I think that some of the child is just gallop because there's another issue that is there at the
Okay, Chair, I was on the slide that I was following the slide, the pages, it was I stopped reading page 4. Page 4.
Mm-hmm.
On your slide. I thought I would go through it and then I think members can just pick and you know, deal with, stop at certain point and deal with the event. So we're on page 4 of the slide. And I think we finished the last one there. Well, the last one, the last slide, let me go to the second slide. Again, enhanced performance management system in primary legislation. Clause 14, the previous ambiguity regarding the minister's authority to issue regulations under Section 72 is removed. Also, provision for consultation with the Minister for Public Service and Administration is issuing the regulations. Now, 99% of that current amendment clause is what was in the Municipal Systems Act. There's just been some updating, for instance, I think we updated there the Skills Development Levies Act, there was a reference to that there. But if you remember in the Municipal Systems Act, there was two sections. There was one section where you make regulations on ABC and guidelines on BBC. We just collapsed that whole thing and said you can make regulations and guidelines on ABC. What happens is this gives the minister Whereas previously he might have been forced to make regulations on something, he might think, no, it's now better now. Depending on the circumstances, you know, what the dynamics are, changes in this. So I'd rather give guidelines on this issue. Where he was only can give guidelines, and because we're getting a lot of complaints, as you might, you know, a number of issues also picking up, you might say, no, it's better to regulate now on this matter, and so forth. So it gives him that flexibility, and then it introduces the consultation with the Minister for Department of Provincial and Administration, because they have an interest in the issue of regulating issues on the human resource as well. Most of the issues are on human resource. In Clause 22, the Code of Conduct of staff members is amended to include declaration of interest by senior municipal officials. This creates synergy with the performance regulation. It also creates synergy with the section in the schedule in the Municipal Systems Act that pertains to declaration of interest for councillors. So we're bringing the section that dealt for all the stipulations, also just bring it into alignment for staff members, you know, the municipal managers and managers and councillors, municipal managers.
The number that means in council we are talking about the person to manage
out. Yes. We must down declare like for what your shared interest and all that. Of course we know why these problems, we're trying to, you know, sort all these problems of corruption and so forth and so on. Then and in the last slide there, duty of province is to conduct investigation. And in instances of non-performance and malice administration of municipalities, section 17, subsection 4 is inserted to empower the minister to advise the MEC to conduct an investigation and to provide the minister and the Minister of Finance with a report dealing with the outcome thereof. Also strengthen the role of provinces to score 20 in conducting investigation. In other words, we're giving more teeth and more force enforcement to this particular aspect, because there are incidences where, you know, people are refusing to set up investigations and, you know, delaying and so forth and so forth and so forth.
But the outcome we don't know. Up until we are told when they intervene. That now this or that is the thing we told you about. Now we got to report to the intervene. Now we question that, you know, the law means that we can't do anything about that. I mean, it's something else. Now if you say now the report must come to us. So that we are able to know beforehand what are the issues that are raised. It assists also in monitoring. So again, what's the level of corruption and the problems over there? So,
yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Because this department has the full sense but the full consensus here. This department.
Yeah.
There's no one reported to Parliament. As the department by the president. Yeah. I think
it is. You understand that? In terms of the law, you are expected to report it to us every year about the state of municipalities. They report to the provinces, we consolidate the report to the post office. Now we must come with something. You know, once the law comes to us, yes, there's nothing we can do. It's our process. We come and tell you what.
Okay, Chair, go to page 5. Page 5, the first slide. The old schedules of the MSA are outdated and lenient in addressing potential corruption. Clause 19 and 21, the amendments to Schedule 1 and 4 of the Schedule 2 are aimed at aligning the MSA to the MFMA its regulations, leading to prohibition of awarding of a contract by a municipal council to a person who is in the service of the state or is an advisor contracted to the municipality. This is already in the Municipal Finance Management Act and it's in its treasury regulations. So we're bringing alignment with that, because if we have disalignment, then one set of law can be exploited against the other set of law.
No, that's the Minister of Finance. He has been very impressive. He's been on the state,
political or is it very good?
Why is this different? Now it dies in total of the body. You don't have the dark picture in the relevant regulation, if you've got a definition of what in the state of competition is, and if you look at it, it talks about officials and elected politicians in both tiers of government. So it's difficult whether it's official or elected representatives, national, provincial, or government.
It means the general of the deputies is not
known. According to the government, yes, but here we are not dealing with the local government, we are not dealing with the provincial.
Okay, I'm on page 5 again, the middle slide, ambiguity with regard to participation of municipal officials in elections for the National Assembly, Provincial Legislature, and Municipal Council. Here we are saying that a person who becomes a candidate for any of these elections must resign as soon as he has received a certificate as a candidate for that particular election. Fundamentally, there are quite a number of governance issues that can lead that if not addressed in a neat and clean and tidy way are going to lead to a lot of controversies on the ground where you have senior officials wanting to stand for elections and so forth and so forth. If you want me to speak a bit more to that, we can, but I just thought I'll like that one. Then the next, the last slide, municipalities require advance payments before issuing a certificate, which places a heavy financial burden on consumers. The Law Society of South Africa has advised us to reduce the current 120 days to 60 days, because in terms of transfers, Mr. Mani, if you can bear me out here, you have to pay an advance up to 120 days before you can finally be certified for transfer. And they said that's too burdensome from the owner of the property to reduce it down to 60 days, which is reasonable. So it's mainly reducing the burden of payment from 120 days to 60 days in that particular clause. Section 102 is amended in this regard. We had also... There was an in quantuana judgment, which was by the Constitutional Court, ruled on the need for municipalities to provide owners of properties with copies of electricity and water accounts sent to the tenants. Now, the reason is, when the owner wants to sell his house, he discovers too late that there's a huge bill left by tenants. And so the court case provided that no. If the owner requests his account, give it to him so that he's knowledgeable far in advance. Before he wants to sell his house, he knows what his debts are, what his problems are, he can deal with this, and so forth. Then we go on to page 6.
What do you mean? You know, you talked about for people who sell, people who are in the draw of the country, selling production, whether for this or that. There's a public service amendment here, which is dealing with the fact that you can only resign from employment. Only if when I right? Here you are saying when to get a certificate. What is the certificate?
The Electoral Commission issues you with a certificate for being a candidate.
Candidate?
Yeah.
Only candidate?
Yeah.
It's gonna be the other law.
I don't understand why it's just so severe. Why can't we just if you guys to stand for election? Why can you not just go on holiday without pay or something like that? I mean, to resign, not knowing whether you're going to get in, just seems to me very, very severe.
One that seems to be an anomaly, we are the one that says that obviously it pays to be in the NCRP, because once you're nominated to the NCRP, only then do you have to resign. The other one says no, once you have been officially accepted as a candidate, but you haven't been nominated or you haven't been voted in, then you've got to resign. Well, what's the constitutionality of that? I'm just asking. Why does it
not make
sense? Mr. Jefferson, with MCOC, I don't understand it here. Because we go for election, we elect all the candidates who were nominated. But with MCOP,
only when the first city was going to sit where they are going to call the names. I don't know whether it happens in Mpumalanga or in the other provinces. It's only then when you hear that they are going to call the names. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
I just wanted to check whether it is in order when I remember you say public service amendment. It is the same as the other politicians. Once you can be a public servant, once you have been sworn in. Now I'm asking about part-time counselor. Whether they do get to the certificates we are talking about. But today we said the part-time counselor will not be affected. It means that it can be a public service. But if you are a part-time counselor, you can continue. Now if we are saying once you receive a certificate, I'm checking whether the part-time counselor do get the certificate. Because if they get the certificate, it means then they also lose to be both counselor and a public
servant. I think the proposal here is must be that yourself, that you talk to the public service, on this issue. So I'll be able to come back on the following presentation and to the tax later on. In fact, my friend, the compromise, but the law speaks to each other, the law, one law.
Okay. Okay, page 6, we're now on page 6 of the slides, and then I've got technical corrections on the top there. Definition of political office bearer, clause 10, is amended to include the executive mayor. That was previously excluded. So it's just a technical. Amendment to section 86H to include omitted section providing that bylaws pertaining to establish a municipal entity must be consistent with the MFMA. Of course, you know the MFMA, also, that's just bringing that alignment there. And then a correction to the Afrikaans text, section 106. Apparently there was a word in Afrikaans called off, which was the English of which was meant off, but it was meant, and the way it was written in Afrikaans, it meant or. And then we're changing it to en, which means and. It's supposed to be and, so forth. So it's just a technical correction. And then we're going to the...
Also there, I think it would be nice that you also talk to the public service in that discussion. Because what is happening is that they are dealing with the issue of the entity, the public entity. Which government is developing policy towards cabinet? Now, the same cabinet must speak to the same thing. Because this thing, at some point, you are going to come with this thing with public service legislation. We should be covering all of this, right? If I think in this interim period, you look at this and you're speaking to each other in the approach. Mm-hmm. And say, look at that, talk to those, and you come back to us whether it's feasible or not feasible. And say, this amendment around the And we look at that. And it's not a harm to engage, to check what is the approach and so on, because these things at some point will come back.
Okay. And then we go on to amendments to the municipal property rate. And then the last slide there, we talk to technical correction. And my colleague will also speak to this. Section 1, clause 23, technical amendments to definitions providing for full legal citation and terminology clarity. That is what clause 23 does. Clause 24, an amendment to align with the Income Tax Act and to provide for improved synergy between legislation. There are certain terms my colleague will just explain. I don't know if you want to explain that.
No, I want to say this thing.
Yeah, the actual here, with the municipal property rate that makes use of the term called the reduction and the income tax makes use of the terminology called expenses, but the things are the same. But as we're dealing with implementation of this thing, we started aligning them so that there is no contradiction because one makes reference to the other, so we are using one terminology.
I will say this technical amendment definition providing for full legal citation and terminological service.
Yes.
That's what it means.
Right.
Now I'm saying this thing, this is what we are getting lost.
Okay.
What are the technical qualities?
Yeah. The technical one, the first one. Let me
ask you quickly. On the first one, what we're doing there, we're dealing with the improving the definition of land tenure rights, because this legislation, you will recall when this legislation came, those from DLE and this one, they were happening more at the same time, so some of them went ahead. So went ahead to make those correct legal citations, is what we're doing there. And also there was an issue about the term called a right registered against the movable party. We use a number of things called easement and all, but I don't want to get into the details. If you look at the deed, we'll see the things which we are giving away to come with one terminology which is commonly agreed and used by practitioners to understand. Then regarding clause 3, is what I was talking about, the second bullet, clause 34, it was alignment with the income tax. So that is the thing of exempting disability reduction. Even when the thing went through this parliament, the intention was for these two things to talk together, but subsequently we realized that the terminologies were not aligned. Then the third bullet, again, is technical amendment. We had something which was called permitted use, but if you look at it, so the lawyers are telling us and the practitioner so that some of the things are redundant. So we are taking the redundant part out of it completely. Then regarding clause 28, again there it was the issue of the National Environment Management Protected Areas Act, so the full legal citation, because that one and the Municipal Property Rights Act happen at the same time, so we are making in terms of legal citation most of the process. The last one there, it was just a minor thing of referring to a wrong section. It deals with issues of the objection process, which is people, they are not happy with the value to the municipal value that to their property value. So those are the things which you call technical amendments.
Okay, can we go on to the next page, Chair? And you'll stop me for the questions if you're looking at page 7. The top slide, alignment of rate policies to municipal budget. Section 3, clause 24, proposed to allow for a rate policy not to reflect the quantification in terms of cost, that is, the revenue foregone to the municipality. This quantification must be reflected in the budget. So not in the rate policy, but in the budget. So he's taking that of one policy and saying, no, it must be reflected, the quantification must be reflected in the budget. And then there it says, section 15, clause 27 is therefore amended to give effect to the provisions of clause 21 above. In the second instance, the phase of drawing a budget and tabling it for public on must include quantification as determined by the valuation board. I don't want to quickly just make a few points on this.
Yeah, no, like the colleague was saying here, what happened is, if you look at the municipal property rate, so there was a scheme as to how things have to happen, but what we have realized with practitioners is that some of the things we created confusion. When you talk about community participation through the rate policy, at that stage it's not possible for any municipality to say in terms of participation, these are the things, because first, a municipality will have to do the actual evaluation itself to have evaluation wrong. When you start with a draft budget, then you will have the things that you call the same amount in the hand of percentages, so this is what is applicable. So it's at that last stage, when you deal with the draft budget of the municipality, that you will be able to have the quantification part. So what we are doing is, in terms of the first clause, which was clause 24, we are taking the quantification out, because it cannot be done. But later on, we are putting it, when we talk about 27, for it to be reflected in the budget. So we are not changing anything, but the sequencing was wrong. So we're creating something which was impossible. So we haven't changed any policy at all. To make the proper alignment as to why it needs to happen.
So go to the middle slide, the need to remove the burden of undertaking evaluation, especially where there is no intention to levy rates and public service infrastructure. Clause 25, the proposed amendment to section 72A2 allows for municipalities not to be compelled to value public service infrastructure where there is no intention in the first place on their part to levy rates on such an infrastructure. Should this amendment not be effected, there is a strong possibility that a municipality's valuation role may be set aside through litigation. if I might just when you make a rule to do a valuation rule and you say you must evaluate blah 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 blah, but certain properties are so difficult, there's no market value for them, like big huge dam or some railway lines and things like that, and you can't come at evaluation. But your evaluation role says no, you must also that evaluate. Now, when you ask the evaluation role, some residents can say no, that's invalid because you're supposed to have got this thing evaluated as well. So we don't want somebody to say, oh well, your evaluation role is invalid because you did not value this public service infrastructure. So we're putting a provision to say that if they have no intention to levy the rate, allow them to go in and produce an evaluation role without having valued that public infrastructure. So if it's in law like that, you cannot contest the valuation role. Because the moment you start contesting the evaluation role and you want to put it aside, remember the valuation role is really underpinned your budget. It's going to tell you in the process what your budget is going to be for it. And if that is set aside, then you can't move ahead with budgeting and so forth and so forth. So we want to prevent these kinds of things. Because clearly, there are certain public types of infrastructure which don't have market values and are very difficult to evaluate.
So the contestants can put no for that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mm-hmm. No, I think that the colleague was saying, the problem is in terms of law, if you look at the legislation we are making reference to, for example, if they have given what we call escape clauses, for example, when you deal with a rural property, you get in communal area. By law, we mean it's easier. If municipalities cannot determine the value of those properties, so that there is no need for them to have them. But for this one, which is also challenging, if it cannot be done, we didn't allow for that to happen in law. And for example, we got a letter coming to our minister from the Council of Ethiopia itself complaining about some of the things. So if you got a metro like Ethiopia, also facing those challenges, and we know that some of the municipalities have not done it, so we're saying those things are highly specialized, and if you look at our readiness as a country in terms of valuation processing, for example, you'll be interested to know that if you look at the whole system, according to the Act as it stands, they need to be valued. But in the regional, we have done a research as a department, there is no single country which is reaching rules anywhere in the world, whether it's the US, Canada, anywhere. So we are dealing with practical issues so that we are not ready, and hence we are making the thing so that if municipalities they don't have an intention to raise, for example, rules, there is no need for them to value it. It's only if they got an intention to value it, to create it, to tax it, so that they will have to do that value. So that is what we are doing. So when they go to the valuation board to answer your question, they will just identify it. They won't have to put a figure for it.
The point means, Mr. West, that we are trying to avoid the wasting time. They are political officials, not the going to the they are beneficial to them in terms of them using the political. Therefore, they know they are not going to be. I mean, this is a good one.
Chairperson, I would like to know from the legal verse. This understanding is right. If you don't have an evaluation role on both, you can always trust them with a flat rate test. Can you do that? Do you do an evaluation to get a tax rate or value on the property? But if you don't have a role, you don't have a evaluation. Beginning, then you must go back to the present.
No, I think that is something which we can check, because we're not dealing with that particular aspect now, because the aspect we're dealing with was this public service infrastructure. So when we engage with yourselves later, we can look at it, but we are not making any amendments regarding the issue.
Okay, can I go to the last slide, differential rating? Clause 19, clause 29, a technical amendment pertaining to the correct citation. The further amendment provides for the use of different ratios as it relates to different property categories such as agriculture, commerce, and industry. Given that the Act allows for differential rating and the amendment aims to clarify different legal interpretations in this regard. My colleague will add it, but fundamentally as it stood in the law, in the property rate, there appears to be different valuers, different officials interpreting that differently. So we attempted to clarify the ambiguity in legal interpretation. But Manika, you want to add about the differential of race?
No, I think in a nutshell what you're saying is correct. Yeah, we spend a lot of time with others, the National Department, us and Shelter. We'll have to go to senior castles to get interpretations for the thing. It is clear it is creating confusion, and in our engagement with municipality it was clear. So we don't want to get into that risk. So hence we are making it clear in terms of law. But also we got to understand that as we bring certain regulations which our minister is considering at the moment to give effect to this particular force as well. So that is how we came to realize that we don't need that risk of people interpreting the things, but we may waste time talking about legal interpretation. So we are taking that out so that people in take on substantive issues, not on simple things of interpretation.
Why do you talk about the regulation? In terms of the original law, are they obligating the minister to come to us on this regulation? Because sometimes, you know, the minister does it, the executive of the, without the parliament, having communication. Now, this was what is happening.
No, we'll bring them to you because we think they deal with the matters which are important.
Okay.
I think here, all the Ezra parts said, any regulation on seven parliaments, they send it to my department to seven within the MJ, and to them, they have seven parliaments, which is a lot. I think what they are saying, that's not the correct.
Okay. And I think you know that the Department of Commerce and Local Media are friends, you know,
Okay, Chairman, we'll go to page 8. The last one, the slide on the top, deals with the property rate. Since the implementation of the Act, it has become apparent that national government, ministry, finance, and the provincial local government for these ministries to protect rate base through setting limits on rate revenues. Section 20, clause 30, the proposed amendment allows for curbing of rate revenues either as a basket or per category of property. What happens is that we're trying to prevent a situation where, for instance, a municipality says, okay, I want to give a rating to, let's say, this area, all these businesses. And then it goes and puts an excessively high property tax rate on those businesses. So we're saying we're giving allowance now for the minister, in consultation with the Minister of Finance, in that case, to intervene so that you do not have adverse effects of that policy action on business and economic activity. You know, there's a section in the Constitution which says that the manner in which we go about imposing taxes, all kinds of taxes, especially local government taxes, should not adversely prejudice, materially prejudice, the flow of goods between provinces and, you know, across boundaries and so forth. So that it helps the national government to keep an eye that things are not getting too excessive in terms of the rate imposed on different categories. I mean, if you theoretically you can outcheck the farmers, you know, and there could be an outcry, and you need a mechanism then for national government to say, no, in this case I think we need to limit this, because there's a national interest at stake here as well. Aside from the fact that you have properties in your municipal area that are not safe for the services through property tax, there's also a national interest at stake in terms of food supply, agriculture, and so on and so forth. So we try to bring a balance, in fact, or create a provision for balancing, should the situation get out of hand.
On that point, when you tell our department how to monitor the compliance to the macroeconomic fundamentals in the country, particularly with regard to the inflation category. The policies that are talking about, what you are talking about, rates that are over 6%, right? How does that affect the macroeconomic situation in the country? And the department, I think, will be able to hear what is the role in that. What's the great what we're talking about? Not only business, but even in the residential area. That the country says the expenditure will not cost to go beyond this 3-6% spending, right?
But then the rate and tax, when they attack the municipality, how do they relate to that? Because if it's an inflationary impact, it is not checked. Then what we hear from the South Kimo
County. Okay. And then we got repeal of legislation, and these are repealing, we got a schedule there, and an example is given of the Yan Kemptok Act. This act dealt with the administration, the former Transvaal and Cape Act, and then the old Promotion of Local Government Affairs Act. They're just redundant. They no longer need to be on the statute book. Now, Chair, you must guide me on time, because the other section deals with some of the comments we received on the first version of the bill, that the Department of Family. We just thought you might be interested to hear it. But if time is of essence, then I would like to go to page 10, right at the bottom.
Now you made majority there.
Yeah, page 10, because this will tell you what are the amendments the previous committee did to the original version of the bill that was introduced in Parliament. As you know, there was a clause, I'm now on page 11 on the first slide on top, clause 6 was rejected on the advice of the state law advisors. That clause was attempting to make ward committees compulsory. There was a feeling that, you know, we need to, because of, you know, having a uniform system of handling public participation throughout the country, that, you know, all municipalities, but because of complex legal implications, even for the constitution, we decided, the committee took that out. And then clause 7 was amended as follows, and of course the most important amendment, the first three clauses there were the same in the original bill. They were the same, they just rearranged the order. Instead of making AA, they made AB, they made BC, and so forth. And the new clause that was added was D. And that provided for the principle of making allocations and resources to ward committees to conduct development. That was the new clause there. Then we go on to this middle slide. The following amendments were made to clause 13 on page 5, line 37, to omit the words of the municipality. What was the sentence was repeating twice in the sentence of the municipality and blah 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 of the municipality, and they just took the one out. And then clause 15 on page 6 after line 43 to insert the following paragraph. That was on that regulations, you know, that whole big section where the minister makes the regulations. We added one more section for the minister to make the regulations, and this is what it says. Notwithstanding section 67(1)(h) of the Act, the Minister may make regulations to provide for a disciplinary code and procedures for municipal managers and managers directly accountable to municipal managers. Now, why is there a need? We currently under the in the process of finalizing the regulations, and during this process we are addressing the issue of willy-nilly ad hoc suspension, you know, which resulted in a huge cost and so forth. And the legal team discovered that there was a disciplinary code that was agreed to between SALGA and the bargaining council. But that pertained mainly to the employees below the managerial level. And that code has lapsed, so they have to renegotiate it. So no code existed for the Section 57 managers. So they took the SALGA code, just, you know, tweaked it here and there, and included it. And municipalities don't even have, most of the municipalities don't have this disciplinary code for the managerial. And it was felt that if we have this disciplinary code and the minister issues this regulation, then at least we're providing a management procedure, which in turn would also handle issues of misconduct, terminations, suspensions, and so forth and so forth for the Section 57 managers. We do not intend that this disciplinary code will replace existing disciplinary code. But where there isn't, and there's no willingness or nobody wants to, you know, get a disciplinary code in, at least the minister now must act. I mean, what happens is that if we don't give the minister a right to that, he gets all sorts of issues raised by, you know, by MinMec that this is happening, and then we don't want a situation where the minister hasn't got that ability to act, at least to solve problems in the interim. So that's why we had that one. And then clause 20 was rejected. Clause 20 dealt with a provision for allowing for the transition of the provision of electricity from municipalities as they are provided now to the REIT. And that clause was crafted in such a way that some of the interpretations were that the minister was given right to exempt, which was interpreted as suspend powers and functions for provision of services, which in fact he can't do because the constitution says that, you know, those are rights of municipalities. But we were looking at the possibility, because the rates are now a given, it's a policy of cabinet, we're trying to create, avoid a legal problem when the transition takes place. Because in that section, in that chapter, it deals with a whole series of procedures, that when a municipality wants to look at an alternative way, alternative mechanism of providing a service, example, electricity, it must follow a procedure. One of the most important procedures must do a feasibility study if it thinks about an alternative mechanism. But the argument from our side was, at that stage, was the alternative for electricity has already been determined by cabinet, you know, and by the executive. And therefore, there's no need for feasibility study. But however, the manner in which it was crafted created problems, and of course the unions, the Matu and Samu, were also strongly objecting because it, you know, of course everybody has interpretation, for example, you know, is this privatization and so forth, so forth, so forth. And then clause 23 on page 8 in line 24, it's just correcting or an and. It should have been and, we have or. So those are the amendments made by the previous committee.
Thank you very much. Well, I think all of us were there. I didn't go to the thing that today. Not today. I think we are coming to the conclusion of our session. Of course, the defender department, the team that is there, led by Edward, Patrick Afrenja, his art, say that we miss you, Ivor. You must convey that to the head of the department, Madam Fenner.
Currently, I am the acting head, so I'm very to myself.
On the razor. I think the most interesting thing that we must talk about this review, this major review of the white paper, the new white paper of police and local government. It sits at the heart of us as well. At the heart. We're settling for something. Very strong one too. It's a quite an important process. But we hope that we can get to the matter that we follow. All the fact that we have today, I think then we await the approval and come with the message. But what I want to check with yourself, Senator, those who are writing soon, in November. If you look at that, that's less than a month from now. Which are pretty shaky. I'm not sure if you do recover. Are there any pressure from this deal?
Yes, definitely. Yes, the first prize is definitely to have it approved by the NPOP, but within the current term.
The second prize
is the first prize, yeah.
There's also an urgency because currently we're rolling out the property rate, implementation of the property rate. And so the sooner we, you know, we clear ambiguities and clarify things, the better the implementation will take place.
You know, the other thing that I want to propose to you, sir, is for you to find a way of
after he got his engagement on the deal. I think he must be able to engage the committee earlier. It is my interest. So that when things, when formal processes come, like this one that we are engaged upon now, people are here about the intention, they are here about what is happening, and they have engaged earlier. It's a tactic that I'm giving advice on. In that way, you will find that your things are handled quite well. And also, you will enhance the relationship. Because I'm telling you, if you come to us now and you are putting pressure, you're saying, oh, this thing has been sitting with for some time.
Yeah.
And therefore, we resist. Because, you know, this is out of me. Exclusive.